Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing.
Guys get more banged and move, work in a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something I can only do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Dr. Jason Staples. Sometimes I don't put that in there, sometimes I do. But here on Seminole Sports Radio through vSporto, also available for subscription through Apple Podcasts or your podcast manager of choice. Got a lot to talk about here. Talked last podcast about, we caught up more or less on where Florida State is at this point in camp. But today I want to do a little bit of a little broader discussion, first of all, about the RPO and about some of those things that have come up in various social media and media discussions about Florida State and about Jimbo Fisher's offense and all of those things. And I'll also address some roster comparisons in this episode. So go ahead and get started. But first, before we get to that, I want to thank the show's sponsor. That is Luis Marquez from Watson Realty Corporation in Jacksonville. Not just a realtor, though. Also a trained photographer and videographer who can help you get the best possible photos and smooth, professional walkthrough video. I've seen some of these that he's done, and I'm telling you, this stuff is going to make your home look like a dream and get it sold quickly for the best possible price. And if you're looking for a home, rather than thinking about listing your house, but if you're looking for a home in the greater Jacksonville area, again, there's no better person to work with and no better team to work with than Lewis and that group over at Watson Realty. So if you are in that boat, you're looking thinking about listing your house or getting ready to look for one in the greater Jacksonville area, give Lewis a call at 850-443-5797. That's 850-443-5797. Or email him at Lewis, L-U-I-S, Marquez at WatsonRealtyCorp.com. Mention that you heard about him through this podcast, and he'll include a free warranty on the home that covers repairs and replacements of essential home systems through the listing period. Once again, thank you to Lewis for sponsoring the show. Now, let's go ahead and start talking RPO. So RPO, for those of you who are less familiar with these acronyms, and you know, college football can be kind of militaristic in lots of ways, and one of them is in the use of lots of acronyms and abbreviations and that sort of thing. RPO just stands for run pass option, and it's become more of a hot topic in recent years because more and more college teams have begun adopting a number of RPO or run pass option type plays and schemes as their base offenses in college football. And of course, it's used a little bit less at the pro level, though it is used at the pro level, and so, you know, it's become a big topic of discussion, in part because of the difference in terms of how the rules are enforced at the pro and college level. At the college level, linemen are allowed to be as much as 3 yards downfield on a pass play, and usually they're given a little bit more wiggle room than that. In the NFL, a lineman can only be a yard upfield, or it's an eligible man downfield. So you got 2 more yards to play with in where your lineman can be on the pass play. And that matters because on run plays, you generally have linemen firing out and trying to get downfield into the linebackers and all of this. And so, you know, your keys, if you're playing defense on football, have long been that you read the offensive line's blocks. If you're a safety, if you're a linebacker, and if the line blocks run, then you do what you're supposed to do on the run. You take your run fit. You hit. You go into the proper gap for your particular scheme, based on what you're going to do if it's a run play. Versus if you see the higher hat, if the guy stands up more and is pass blocking, then you stay in the pass. Drop into pass coverage. What the run pass option does as much as anything else is it screws with those reads. You have the offensive line blocking run, while the defensive line, or while the quarterback makes the call, in the over the course of the play, or sometimes often in the pre-snap, as often as not, it's pre-snap in terms of that. But the quarterback, everybody else does the same thing. Receivers are running routes, whether it's a run play or a pass play. and the running back is going with a run play, regardless of whether it's run play or pass play, and the offensive line is blocking run. The only person who does anything different is the quarterback. The quarterback chooses either to give it, to keep it, or to throw it. And sometimes there's multiple throwing options or whatever. But essentially what that does is it screws with the defense's keys so that, you know, a linebacker winds up coming downhill to stop the run because he's reading his keys properly, but you drop a slant behind him where he should be in pass coverage because you're actually throwing the ball despite everything else being a run. Whereas if he decides to stay back, then you might just hand the ball to the running back. That's a second level RPO where, you know, you're reading a linebacker, a second level player, and gunning it in behind him based on what he does. Now, that's one way of doing this. There are all sorts of RPOs, all sorts of different types. And Jimbo Fisher was asked about whether or not he was going to do more RPO stuff this year, and he kind of bristled at it and said, "Listen, we've run RPOs at Florida State for years." He's like, "We run, you know, 7-8 or more RPOs per game." And he says, and actually he's being honest. And, you know, some of the media kind of poo-pooed this and said, "Well, you know, he's you know, hedging his terminology here," but he really isn't. I mean, what he pointed out is he said, "Listen, every time we throw a bubble screen," that's what he said, "every time you see a bubble screen, that's a run play call." And I broke this down for scout.com in an article on that particular concept back in, I want to say 2007 or 2008, explaining that. That every time you see a bubble screen call, it's actually a run call that you just have a bubble tag to it as a run pass option. Now, Bud Elliott and some others in the Florida State media have rightly pointed out that there is a difference between that kind of bubble screen, which basically involves you're reading the box. It's a pre-snap read. The quarterback counts the number of players in the box. If it's above the if you got the extra player in the box, then you throw the bubble because he's responsible for the bubble. If the extra player is out covering the bubble, then you run the football where you got extra numbers in the box. So that's a pre-snap RPO. And most teams in the country and basically every pro team run the same thing. Easy to do. And since the ball is thrown behind the line of scrimmage, screen rules apply, which means the offensive line can release freely. So no issues. Now, the question then is, does Fisher run any other RPOs? And to this, and actually this is where Bud Elliott wants to draw a distinction between true RPOs, what he regards as true RPOs, where you're reading a guy after the snap, versus RPOs where it's predetermined before the snap. And that to some extent is a little bit of a false division, and in some other ways it's not. And I think it's fair to draw the distinction most of the time. That said, Florida State does, in some cases, run other RPOs. They'll run slants, for example, where you'll see the back getting ready to take the handoff, but the quarterback is actually already throwing by the time the back gets there. You know, this is in the gun, based on what he's seeing at the snap from the linebacker. So you got, again, at that point, you're throwing that slant behind the backer, just like I was talking about. Now, what Bud is really talking about and what he's pushing for, what he thinks Florida State needs to do more of, are true triple options. And this is where it gets tricky, because the run pass option, the way that it's done in offenses that are really more committed to just running the RPO as their base, that we're going to be an RPO offense, it really is actually just running traditional triple option, with the major difference, and I wrote an article on this, I want to say in 2013 or so, for Inside Carolina, a site that covers North Carolina football, because North Carolina is a base RPO offense, or has been a base RPO offense in the past. They're doing a little bit, they told me this year they're going to do a little bit less RPO than they have in the past, because they felt like in some ways it cost them some physicality there, so they want to do a little bit less of it, but they'll still do a lot of it. But anyway, Fedora is one of the guys who used, Larry Fedora is the head coach at North Carolina, is one of the guys who really pioneered using it as much as it is today. And Fedora worked under Fisher DeBerry, who was a flexbone guy, ran a scheme similar to, but a little different from what Paul Johnson did. For most fans, it's going to look identical. two guys in the flexed position in the slots, one B back, you know, kind of a fullback behind the quarterback, and then, you know, you get that motion, that orbit motion behind the running back, and you run the triple option there. What Fedora did, and what a number of guys did around the same time, is they decided they could run the same option principles, but from a more spread out look. And basically what that means is, instead of having that fullback behind the quarterback under center, all you do is you take it and you drop back into the shotgun. Now that guy becomes more of a running back type in the hip. And instead of having running back types in those slots to motion around to be the pitch man as the third option in the triple option, where the first option is give it to the back, second option is quarterback keeps it, third option is the pitch man. Instead of that, what you do is you take those guys and you spread them out and you make them more wide receiver types. And the initial stuff was basically to run inside zone and inside zone read with the bubble tagged, where essentially the running back is your first option. The quarterback is actually then your third option rather than your second option. And the bubble is the third option predetermined based on a box count. That's where that came from. And so it's actually triple option football. It's just when the reads are happening changed a little bit. And by putting the players in a slightly different position, you allow the field to be spread a little bit more, get more guys out of the box, and you create more of a vertical threat. That's why this happened. And then what ended up happening is you had more building on that with zone pass or with option passes, where now you have a zone read where the quarterback goes to keep the ball and then gets on the edge and then tries to throw downfield. That's basically the same thing that you would see with Nebraska with the old zone with the old triple option pass with Tommy Frazier years ago. It's the same stuff. But what makes it tricky is, in order to run a lot of those RPO, the more advanced type RPOs where you've got a quarterback running out on the edge, and it's actually a triple option, you actually have to more or less rep that a ton. You have to commit to being a triple option team. That has to become more or less your identity. And in order to do that, you have to sacrifice a lot of other things. Usually, triple option teams traditionally have not thrown the ball all that well because it takes a lot of reps to be able to rep the triple option enough to do it well, and that time that would ordinarily be devoted to getting a passing game, getting the timing of a passing game down, can't be devoted to that time. So you kind of have a choice. What do you choose to rep as much as, you know, enough to be really good at it? And Jimbo Fisher's choice over the years has been he'd prefer to have the balance of being able to throw downfield and have a dynamic passing attack downfield rather than spending so much time in triple option football. So he'll do RPOs, but most of it's not going to be of the triple option type. Sometimes you'll see a zone read with the bubble, and that is a triple option. It's just one of the options is usually pre-snap. And they don't teach the zone read all that well. I don't think they rep it enough in practice to be able to do it all that well. They don't execute it all that well, or at least haven't in the last 5 years, haven't executed it all that well when they've run it. The quarterbacks have made poor reads quite a bit. But the thing is, most other RPOs, once you adjust for that particular type of triple option RPO, most other RPOs are the sorts of things that Florida State runs. Heck, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers ran some last night, where it looks just like play action, but the quarterback's actually reading, and you don't necessarily know it unless you really know what the call is, or you've coached this and you know what keys you're looking at. And Florida State does do some of that. And again, that's where this gets fuzzy, because for some, they want to say run pass option, and by that they mean really triple option run pass option, where the quarterback run is the primary balancing threat versus RPO with the bubbles, which is one type. And then you've got the sort of in between where it's RPO, But it's run pass option without much of a quarterback run threat, because it's either run the running back or throw a slant or throw upfield on a fade or throw what's called a possum route, which North Carolina ran a lot last year with Mitch Trubisky, because he could throw it so well, where it's a five step inside sort of halfway between a skinny post and a slant, and you're reading the linebacker there, and it looks it and Clemson ran this a bunch with Mike Williams, by the way, as well. And Deshaun Watson, it looks exactly like play action. Only difference is what the line's doing, and also what the quarterback, whether the quarterback actually has the option to hand it off, depending on what he sees pre-snap and also where his eyes are post-snap. There really is no option for the quarterback to run there, but it is very much an RPO. And Florida State does do some of that. North Carolina, Clemson, they do that. And to me, that's actually, in many ways, your most dangerous RPO outside of the highly illegal triple option RPOs, which are actually tend to be accidental in many cases, where you get like the Ole Miss ones where they run a zone read with a guy releasing downfield, and Kelly gets strung out enough, and then he goes, oh wow, there's a guy wide open downfield. For the most part, that's not schemed up as much as you might think. Some of that is they're releasing that guy downfield, but more often than not, you don't tend to plan for your quarterback to be able to throw it. And I know that because I coach an offense where we do that. We run a base zone read scheme and run a lot of triple option type RPOs. And generally speaking, you're trying to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands quicker than that. So it's accidental. And when you get the benefit of the rules going your way, then that's a positive for the offense, of course. So there really isn't much more to say about the RPO in Florida State there. Well, I guess there is one more thing, and that's to say, all you have to do to see why Fisher's taken the approach that he has is look at what Saban's done this year. So last couple of years, you had a lot of people that were covering Florida State that were saying, man, Florida State should be going the Kiffin direction. Look what Bama's doing with Kiffin. They're going more, you know, RPO stuff, and by that, those folks generally meant the triple option type RPO, run heavy type stuff, particularly last year with Jalen Hurts. They ran a ton of triple option type RPOs. And that was their base. Thing is, that's what cost them. When they got into the college football playoff, you could see they hadn't repped the passing game enough for them to be crisp in that area, because you have to spend so much time doing all the other stuff. And they wound up not having the balance necessary to win that game. They had a lot of three and outs once they faced a defensive line that could stop them. And yes, that defensive line was stopping them before Scarborough got hurt. We talked about this on a prior podcast. Clemson had adjusted. And again, they only scored 10 against LSU, and they struggled to move the ball for the most part against Washington. And Washington didn't even have one of their top defenders in that game. So, you know, it ended up costing him precisely because they'd spent so much time repping all that triple option stuff and just didn't have time to rep a lot of the passing game stuff. So what did Saban do? He went out and brought in a guy who's going to bring them closer to what Fisher does. They'll still do some RPO stuff, and they'll still do some of that triple option stuff, but it's not going to be the core. It's not going to be the stuff that they rep all the time, because they've got to. Saban recognized that they'd gotten too far and unbalanced in that direction, and defenses could load up a little bit too much against the run. And running the quarterback is not a balance against running the running back the way that throwing with the quarterback is a balance against running with your running back. So they're going to be tougher to defend. Question is how quickly Hurts can pick a lot of that up, but they're going to be tougher to defend over the next couple of years as a result of that change. As Saban has gone back more towards the Jimbo Fisher approach on this, recognizing that really, I think he recognizes he made a mistake in letting things go and going quite as far to the triple option type RPO stuff as he did. So let's go ahead and move into the second segment here. This is another thing. And actually this part of the podcast, this segment is actually the result of some back and forth via text, phone, and Twitter with Bud Elliott from Tomahawk Nation and SB Nation and the Knollcast, talking about the rosters of Florida State and Alabama and how they compare. And I thought Bud asked a really interesting question. This was on Twitter, and we've talked about this before in the past, but he asked a really interesting question that he's asked in the past. How many guys at Florida State? How many Florida State players would start at Alabama? And this was, you know, he's saying this more or less assuming that Alabama, you know, he's made the case, and I think generally he's right, and he certainly was right last year and the year before, that Alabama's more talented than Florida State. Florida State in 2015, I think Bud was right. Florida State may have had one defensive player, Jalen Ramsey, that would have started at Alabama in 2015. One out of 10. And it's not clear how many would have cracked Alabama's too deep in 2015. That's how good that Alabama 2015 defense was and how deep with NFL talent. But he asked that question again. And again, the assumption is Alabama's going to win the lion's share of those matchups. But it made me want to think about it. It made me want to actually do a podcast on this. And I'm going to do actually two segments on this, one in this segment and then one in the next podcast, which I'll talk about at the end of this segment as well. But made me go through the two depth charts and go, you know, who would I start over? Who would start here versus here? And the first thing is, this is really difficult. There's a lot of very close matchups between the two. There's a lot of places where you're like, ah, that's kind of a push or pretty close to it. And then the other problem is, well, which offense, which scheme, which defense, which scheme are you going for? Are we talking about how many guys, if they got plugged into the Alabama scheme, would start there versus somebody coming over and getting plugged into Florida State scheme and their offense and how they've run things the last couple of years would start? And I think that changes the answer in some cases. So I decided to go down the list and say, okay, well, you know, assuming, say, an 11 personnel, three wide, one tight, on offense, and then a 4-2-5 on defense, which is what Florida State runs on defense, but Alabama runs it about as often as Florida State, although they often go odd front, so a 3-3-5 at Alabama, basically the same thing. Who would I take as those guys? Who would actually start if we were doing this? So I'm going to discuss my way through this. I think there are a few very obvious picks, and I'll start on offense. The first thing, Calvin Ridley's a starter at either place. No problem. Calvin Ridley's a starter. I think at tight end, Ryan Izzo is a starter. So that's one for Florida State. I think he starts at either place at tight end. And I think you can make a case for Saunders as the number two guy between the two teams, though Bama's young talent is very good at tight end. Of course it is. Then you go down the list and you go, okay, you know, the assumption of a lot of Florida State fans would be, well, you know, obviously Alabama's entire offensive line starts. Not exactly true. I don't think that's quite true. I think Jonah Williams at left tackle, definite starter. Alabama's left tackle starts either place. I think Bradley Bozeman, the center for Alabama, starts over Eberle or anybody else Florida State has at either place. I think Ross Pierschbacher, the left guard, starts over anybody Florida State's got at guard, even though that's closer. I think Florida State's guards are pretty good. But the right side of Alabama's line still has a long way to go, and they've got the same kinds of questions that Florida State does, only they've got less talent, less experience. They've got every bit as much talent. They've got less experience there than Florida State does returning. In some ways, they may have more questions on the right side of Alabama's line than Florida State does. So I think that offensive tackle, you might take Rick Leonard over, say, a true freshman, Alex Leatherwood, who's right now projected as a possible starter there. Matt Womack, who struggled for Alabama in spring practice there. Maybe you take Womack over him, but I think actually you take Florida State's right tackle. If you put Rick Leonard there, I think you might take him over Alabama's right tackle. And I think you can make a case for Cole Minshew over, say, Lester Cotton, who right now is projected as the most likely, at least last I checked, was projected as the most likely right guard for Alabama. You know, Leatherwood's worked in there some. Deontay Brown's worked in there some. But I'm not sure that Florida State doesn't have two offensive linemen that would wind up starting at Alabama. We could be conservative and say one, right? But either way, you've got Izzo and at least one lineman, I think, that starts, but I think probably two. So that's three starters for Florida State so far. Then you get to quarterback. And quarterback's interesting because if you're running what Kiffin ran last year, then yeah, you probably have Hurts. But if you're running what Florida State ran last year, is going to run this year, and what Alabama is going to run this year, I think you're going to prefer DeAndre Francois and by a good bit. And this is actually something that I talked to some people last year about, where, you know, there are some people who are frustrated that, that Fisher was running Francois less, which for one, he was banged up pretty good, but that's another thing. But why drop back and throw with a quarterback who just isn't showing the comfort level to do all that? Well, once they got to the midpoint of the season, once they actually lost it, once they lost to North Carolina and it was not a playoff season, what do? You try to get your guy ready to do the things that you really think you need him to do once it becomes a championship year the next year. And FSU really repped that stuff. And that should help Francois take a step forward as a passer this year. Now, Hurts didn't do that to the same degree. And it's, I think to some degree, he's got more ground to make up as a passer as a result. So I think you take Francois, I would take, if I'm choosing between the two, I take Francois as a quarterback between the two. And again, I don't think that's a matter of homerism or bias there. I just think, again, Francois is the better passer. And if you're going to run a more balanced offense, Francois is more prepared to take that step forward, at least if we're just projecting now. But you could argue for that being a push if you want to. At running back, I say it's a push. Damian Harris or Bo Scarborough versus, again, you've got the five-headed monster at Florida State with the running backs there. It's the two best running back groups in the country. You could, you know, trade them out, and neither team is going to be complaining about the guys that they have at running back. But, you know, I think the most talented running back of the group is Cam Akers. I think the second most talented running back of the group is Najee Harris between the two teams. So, and you know, I think each of them has that big bruiser with Jacquez Patrick and Bo Scarborough, and each of them has some speed guys and some guys that can take it the distance and be a little bit more of the more traditional type back there. So I think you've got to push at running back. Then at the other two wide receivers get interesting. I think you can make a case that the next wide receiver should be Robert Foster from Alabama. I think based on experience, you probably favor him. You know, he's 6'3". He's also, he's a little bit older guy. He's got a little bit more. He's a little bit more proven. So I think I'm going to go with Robert Foster as the number two receiver. But I think you can make a case that the most talented wide receiver that, it, you know, mid-year, you might say, I prefer Keith Gavin over him. And then the third receiver I would take would be either Tate or Nooney. I would take Tate because of the size over Cameron Sims, the jumbo slot receiver for Bama, but I don't think quite the talent in that regard, quite the matchup problem that Tate is. So I think you can make a case that Florida State has for one of Florida State's receivers, you end up with two Bama receivers and one of Florida State's at this phase, projecting forward. So counting through the offense, you give Bama 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then you give Florida State 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then a push at running back. So I think on offense, you can make a case that it's more or less a push. I think Bama's just a little bit better up front. I think, you know, the wide receiver tight end groups kind of wash. You give Florida State a little bit of an edge at quarterback, and then Alabama and Florida State, you know, you can give them a push at receiver. Then what? What do you do on defense? This is where it gets really interesting. Because Alabama, it's been a long time, I think, since Alabama has played a defense, has played a game where the opposing defense was better than the Alabama defense. And yes, Alabama's loaded with five-star talent across the board, just like every other year. They're replacing outgoing five stars with five stars. But when you start going down the list, what are you going to choose? That's the interesting thing. And Florida State's got the same kind of talent on defense that Bama does. And some of it's a little bit more proven. So I go down the list and I say, you know, at defensive tackle, I'm going to run two defensive tackles out there, and I'm going to take two defensive tackles. I'm going to take Derek Nnadi, and I'm going to take Deron Payne. Yeah, I got two nose type guys, but those are the two best defensive tackles on the team, or out of the two teams. Then at defensive end, I'm going to take Deshaun Hand. I'm going to take him as my big end. And then I'm going to take at that rush linebacker, or you know the rush end, if you want to call him that. I'm taking Josh Sweat. I am taking Josh Sweat over Anfernee Jennings or Christian Miller or whoever Florida State has there, whether Terrell Hall or Terrell Lewis as he's going by now. I'm taking Josh Sweat in that position. So on the defensive line, it's two of each. At linebacker, it's a two linebacker set. If we're going 4-2-5. I'm taking both Alabama linebackers, Sean Dion Hamilton, and I'm taking Rashawn Evans. So Alabama gets both linebackers. I don't think you can argue for the Florida State linebacking core over the Alabama core, especially if Matthew Thomas is not out there. I think he will be. And if Thomas is out there, then he's pretty much the equal of either of those guys from Alabama. But right now you can't count on him. So, and even as an equal, I'll still give it to Bama for the unit. Then we get into the secondary, and this could get contentious. And that is, well, first of all, Florida State has the best player on either team. Derwin James is an automatic. He's going to start anywhere in the country. He's going to start in the NFL. So Derwin's an automatic starter. I think McFadden is the best corner on either team. He's going to be the first corner off the board from either team, unless you take Minka Fitzpatrick and put him at corner, which I did. But I think those two are, you could take one or the other at corner. So you get those two, Fitzpatrick as the other corner for me. So James, McFadden, Fitzpatrick. Then the question of the star and free safety positions gets interesting because Florida State's so loaded at free safety and has some versatile players. I think the way that I would do this, I would take Ronnie Harrison as the free safety and Trey Marshall as the star. So what that means is defensively, I would wind up with two of each on at defensive tackle, or two of each on the defensive line, two Alabama linebackers, and then three of the five defensive backs from Florida State. So essentially, Alabama would have six defenders, and Florida State would have five if I was just picking starting lineups based on those two teams for this hypothetical scheme. So you have a push on offense and Alabama's up by one player on defense. But then as soon as you dip into depth, particularly up front on defense, Florida State's got more depth on the defensive line by a lot than Alabama this year, especially guys with experience. And it's been a long time since that's been the case. And when you talk about secondary depth, Florida State's got fewer question marks in the secondary. And, you know, because Trayvon Diggs, look at what he looked like in the spring game for Alabama. There's some questions about what they're doing at that other corner. Florida State has fewer questions in some of those places in the secondary with guys who played last year and have experience, and has some players that can move around with some flexibility there. So I think Florida State is probably better. I think you can argue Florida State's better in the secondary and better on the defensive line than Alabama, and Alabama's definitely better at the linebacker position. So if the offenses are a push, this makes it really interesting. So, you know, I'm going to wrap here in evaluating that. I do want to hear your feedback on Twitter and on Facebook or wherever on what you think about which guys would start and where you may agree or disagree with my analysis here. In terms of why I'm choosing certain guys for, you know, as I do this little exercise of the all-star depth chart from the two teams, but I think it basically comes down to a push on offense and Bama's up by a player on defense, but with less depth. So it's been a long time since Bama was in one of those matchups. It's going to be really interesting to see how this goes. And again, Florida State has a couple wide receivers that can give Bama's corners problems, which, as we talked about on the prior episode, is everything when you're playing Alabama. You better have those guys. So on the next episode, I'm actually, I think I'm going to talk about I think I'm going to do a draft. Let's place, let's say, the top 30 guys in order. And let's see who gets who I would draft. I'm at least contemplating that. If you'd be interested in that, let me know on Twitter. Let me know on Facebook. And I'd be interested to hear some of the other some of your picks. If you know, who would your top 15 picks be if you were choosing between these teams, choosing the players only on these rosters? Be an interesting exercise. So we're going to go ahead and wrap there. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast, brought to you by Luis Marquez of Watson Realty in Jacksonville. Going to go ahead and wrap the show. Lots to talk about still as we get through the rest of camp. But this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.